Welcome to the Whole Psychiatry Hour on WMET 1160 with your host, Dr. Bob Hedaya. Sit back, relax, listen, and learn about a unique approach to mental health. And now, here's your host of the Whole Psychiatry Hour, Dr. Bob Hedaya.
Welcome, folks. It's great to be with you this morning on the Whole Psychiatry Hour on WMET 1160. It's my pleasure to be with you. I'm Dr. Robert Hedaya, your host on the Whole Psychiatry Hour every Sunday at 11 a.m. That's 1160 at 11. I'm a psychiatrist in private practice in Chevy Chase, Maryland. I'm a professor of psychiatry at Georgetown University, and I'm the founder of National Center for Whole Psychiatry in Chevy Chase, Maryland. In this show, every week, my goal is to broaden your concept and understanding of the factors that contribute to your mental health. I want to break the mindset that says that the best and only way to mental health is drugs and therapy. I want to give you information and understanding that will enable you to search for other ways of achieving mental health. And I want you to take responsibility for your mental health, not simply to rely on medication. In Whole Psychiatry, we try to look at all of the factors that affect your mental health, including the immune system, including hormones, genetics, the liver function, the GI tract, how culture affects us, spirituality, places we live in and work in. And everything we do and everything we talk about is based in science. I will not bring anyone onto this show who does not have a foundation and a grounding in science. It's very important that we explore these things because, as we know, there are marginal response rates to current treatments for mental illness and mental health problems. Medications, while they are an advance, only fully treat psychiatric problems about 30% of the time. Another third of people get a partial response, and another third get a incomplete or no response and only side effects. Many, many people are on multiple medications, and more people are relying on medication and not even going through psychotherapy. On this show, we are gearing our approach towards broadening your view and getting you out of that revolving door mentality in mental health. So each week, we are going to explore a different angle on mental health. On the Whole Psychiatry Hour today, we're going to have an enlightening discussion. I think it will be very enlightening with someone who has been called a mold warrior, a physician who has fought the political forces to defend his patients' interests. Dr. Richie Shoemaker is a family physician who has pioneered the understanding and treatment of biotoxin illness. These are illnesses that affect both mental and physical health. Before I introduce my guest, I want to give you a little background on the subject matter. If you've been listening to the show, or if you've read my books, you know that the immune system is very closely linked with the brain and with the nervous system. It is a fact that molds and other substances, other organisms produce toxins, which actually enable them to survive in the world. But when these toxins are introduced into our bodies, some of us develop very severe health problems. Our concern today is with the mental health aspects of these biological toxins, or biotoxins for short. The focus will be looking at the immune system and behavioral consequences, how these things affect your day-to-day life. The symptoms caused by mold or other biotoxin illnesses are very varied. But many people who are ill with mold or other biotoxin illnesses have what appear to be mental illness, mood swings, sleep problems, chronic fatigue, dizziness, anxiety. Very, very broad diversity of symptoms. Aside from the mental health problems, it's very clear that mycotoxins can damage DNA, your genes. They can inhibit your ability to make energy or to produce proteins in your body. They can affect the mitochondria. Those are the energy factories of your cells. They can affect your heart. The list of effects is amazingly broad and long. In this spirit, let me introduce my distinguished guest, Dr. Richie Shoemaker, who was initially trained as a molecular biologist at Duke University. He's been in family practice for over 20 years, and he was actually elected or awarded the Maryland Family Practice Physician of the Year in 2000. He's published numerous articles in medical journals on chronic neurotoxin-mediated illnesses. He's fought political battles with state and local officials who refuse to acknowledge these illnesses, and he's the author of several books, including Mold Warriors and Desperation Medicine, which raise very important questions about social policy, ethics, finances, and illness. Welcome, Richie. It's great to have you on the show.
Well, thank you, Bob. It's wonderful to have a chance to talk to you over the phone. I think in a very short summary, you put together as nice a description of the world of mold illness as I've heard recently. If we could just add one important character to the discussion, it would be the word inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
And when we talk about inflammatory problems, mold exposure for those genetically susceptible leads the list in my practice.
Wow. Let me ask you this. How would you define a biotoxin for the public?
The word biotoxin doesn't apply to every toxic chemical that there's on this planet. It refers just to some very small compounds made by living creatures that have the capability of moving from cell to cell, in addition to moving in the bloodstream, that can activate the inflammatory process. So there are three real main features to what a biotoxin is. You know, if I think about, you know, botulism, well, that sounds like a biologically produced neurotoxin that can hurt us. That's true. That compound, botulinum toxin, is a very large molecule that doesn't set off an inflammatory process.
Some of these other molecules are smaller, and we're going to be back with Dr. Richie Shoemaker talking about biotoxin illness very shortly. This is Robert Hedaya on WMET 1160, the Whole Psychiatry Hour.
If getting life insurance is on your things to do list, now you can get a term life policy in just 10 minutes. 10 minutes to get up to $150,000 of term life insurance if you qualify through Jefferson National Life Insurance Company. Call now for a free quote, 1-866-612-3600. With Jefferson National, there's no medical exam, no long forms, and no agent will visit you. Just complete a short application over the phone. If you qualify, your coverage starts right away. That's instant term life coverage in one simple call. Call Jefferson National at 1-866-612-3600. Getting life insurance has never been easier to cross off your list. Contains limitations. Based in Dallas, Texas, Jefferson National issues term life under form number JNLSEL03 or a state variation. Call Jefferson National now. 1-866-612-3600. That's 1-866-612-3600.
Attention men and women suffering from hair loss. Now, with Avacor, a world leader in hair regrowth, you don't have to be bald, even if you have a family history of hair loss. Here's Dr. Mark Goodman, board-certified dermatologist.
The main reason for thinning hair and baldness is hereditary hair loss. Just because there is a family history of hair loss doesn't mean you have to suffer. Avacor is specially formulated to reverse hereditary hair loss and regrow new healthy hair. Our formula targets the hair follicle to effectively stop hair loss and stimulate new hair growth. Before you consider expensive transplant surgery, remember, Avacor is FDA approved to regrow new healthy hair for men and women.
We're giving away a free month of Avacor with all of today's orders. Call 800-449-8917. That's 800-449-8917. Satisfaction guaranteed or your money back. Call 800-449-8917. That's 800-449-8917.
You put your keys between your knuckles. Someone approaches you and you cross to the other side of the street. You lock the door behind you, maybe twice. Now you feel safe. You think you've made the right choices to protect yourself. Think again. Because if you're not eating right, if you're not active, or if you smoke, you're putting yourself at risk for disease. Learn to protect yourself from yourself at everydaychoices.org. A message from the American Cancer Society, American Diabetes Association, American Heart Association, and the Ad Council.
Talk Radio WMET 1160 is your station for intelligent talk and a little bit of wackiness. Greaseman gets you started in the morning at 6, followed by Tony Snow at 9, J.T. Ballard at noon, G. Gordon Liddy at 2, Linda Chavez on your drive home, the Bauer and Rose Show in the evenings, and Alan Combs late nights. Your station, for talk. WMET 1160 and online at WMET1160.com.
You're tuned to the Whole Psychiatry Hour on WMET 1160. Here once again is your host, Dr. Bob Hedaya.
Welcome back to the Whole Psychiatry Hour at WMET 1160. I'm your host, Bob Hedaya, MD. We're talking with Dr. Richie Shoemaker, a family physician who has really pioneered the way in biotoxin illness. Richie, you were talking about types of biotoxins, and you mentioned one type, like a botulin type of toxin. What are the other two types you were referring to?
Well, if we think about these toxic chemicals, we have a basic understanding they're going to hurt us, but how they hurt us is really what I'm trying to get across right now. I'm looking at compounds that have some direct effects, but the main source of damage that patients suffer are from the multiplying or amplifying biological responses to initiation of this harmful stimulus. In a way, it's similar to someone who's stung by a honeybee. They might have a local reaction and redness and might be itchy, a little sore even, but someone else also stung by the same kind of bee, if they have genetic susceptibility, can have an inflammatory response that makes them go into shock. And the difference between one person and the other, why did one person not suffer a problem and someone else was very serious illness, is paralleled by the compounds that I deal with. And, you know, if you take some mold spores, and you don't need very many to make you sick, they'll have some molecules of toxins on them. There are other parts of mold products that have toxins different from the spores. But this idea that only a few spores can make people very seriously ill has bothered some previous practitioners in the field. And they said, wait a minute, you can't possibly be sick from this low number of spores or this low number of molecules. Well, actually, it is the process that is initiated by exposure to these spores, to exposure to these toxins, that then multiplies the effect.
So because of their genetic susceptibility, it's kind of like a feed-forward mechanism. Things kind of spiral out of control, and that's the part that gets people in trouble?
Absolutely. And it is that inflammatory process that will go throughout the body, so that while you might be breathing in spores and some compounds from a water-damaged building that smells musty, or you might see it, like, doesn't have to be as bad as the pictures you see in New Orleans and in Biloxi, Louisiana, for illness to be caused. But what happens is that the inflammatory process can target muscle and nerve and lung and joint and GI tract, and no different from those other tissues, it also targets the brain.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Dr. Richie Shoemaker, a pioneering family physician about mold, on WMET 1160. Richie, can you tell the audience the story of the Ritz-Carlton apartments in D.C. and what you saw?
One of the group of patients that I've seen have been tenants of this luxury high-rise condominium in Washington. I now have six people that have come here, and what happened is that even though the condominium sold for $2 million and more, the construction defects and the plumbing problems caused the same water leaks and mold growth that you find in any building, independent of how much it costs. So here we had new construction, expensive construction, and golly, who would ever dream there could be a mold problem? And in fact, some of the highest concentrations of toxin-forming compounds, not just molds, but bacteria and some actinomycetes as well, were growing in one apartment after another in this luxury upscale residence.
So what happened?
Well, what happened was that there was a delay in getting the problems identified. There were problems in getting the building, the areas remediated once they'd been identified as having a problem. And patients who stayed in those residences included a subset of people who've gone on to have very significant cognitive problems. Some of the children have had neurobehavioral problems, difficulty with learning, difficulty with school performance. And even though the building is in significant litigation, there still is an ongoing concern about whether that building is safe for anybody or not.
How common do you think these types of problems are? Say in the general population, what's the risk?
We know that 24% of our patients, of the whole population, will have genetic susceptibility. It's not everybody, only 24%. But OSHA has identified, and in their opinion, they think that 10% of workplaces across the country and 15% of public schools are ones where there's significant mold problems.
Do you think that's an underestimation?
Oh, well, that doesn't even include residences, and most assuredly, the number has not been identified. I know I can't go to a group of 15 or 20 people without finding a mold patient.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What kind of environments should people suspect that might be promoting biotoxin illness?
The real issue for mold is you've got to have excessive moisture. I start from the basement, and most of the time, if someone has their laundry in the basement, they say, "Oh yes, it smells a little musty, a little funny, but I don't see anything growing, and in the dirt in the crawl space is dry, so it couldn't possibly be a problem." Well, actually, that dirt looks dry because of ongoing evaporation of moisture from the ground itself. So there will be excessive moisture in those basements.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at homes with fancy roof lines and flashing that wasn't done right or shingles not applied properly because, you know, the faster you put the roof on, the quicker you get onto the next house and the more money you make.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at chimneys, notorious for having problems with, you know, with leaks around the caps and leaks around flashing. If you look at areas with windows that don't fit and doors that don't fit, and heaven forbid you should have plumbing problems or, say, a plug in the HVAC so that there's this accumulation of condensation up in the attic that spills over into the first floor.
How about this forced air heating system that we all live with?
You know, it's almost a guaranteed prescription that forced air heat will be the best distributor of airborne bioaerosols that there is. I cringe when I hear about people putting their air handlers and their heating units in a crawl space.
Mm. We're talking with Dr. Richie Shoemaker on WMET 1160. Richie, does mold testing by an allergist, say those skin tests, would that tell someone if they have mold toxins or susceptibility to them?
You know, Bob, I think you've really understood an awful lot of the concepts here very quickly, and my hat's off to you. Specifically, no. The immune response we can divide into two main categories. Innate immune response, that's where my illnesses reside, and then acquired immune response. That's the antibody situation. That's where the allergy comes in. And when you have an allergen or a skin test, we're looking at IgE or immune globulin E, and those levels are almost always normal in mold patients. Allergy has nothing to do with a biotoxic illness at all.
Hmm. So what's the difference between an allergy and being toxic? How would you describe that?
If you and I go into a building and I'm genetically susceptible and you're not, but you're allergic to a mold, and we both get a headache and red eyes and a sore throat and a cough, we'll take both of us out pretty quickly. I'll stay sick because the inflammatory process is not stopped by removal from exposure, but you're just allergic. Your illness will clear in a day or so. Same thing with people who have irritation from compounds. If you're not improved by removal, it's not allergy. And if it's a toxin illness, it will not self-heal.
So this just stays in your system. This toxin stays in your system. Now, let me ask you a question. Can I actually, let's say I ate chicken or beef from an animal that was raised in a mold-infested environment. Those toxins are in the animal's system. Can I get sick if I am genetically susceptible by eating such an animal?
Theoretically, that's possible. I've never seen it, and I keep on looking for it. The USDA worries about the alimentary canal and ingestion of toxins. They even put limits on how much aflatoxin, which is found in cereal grains very often, we were allowed to eat. And the old question of, was this the aflatoxin from the peanut butter that make the guy sick? Well, actually, no. And what we can do to prove that is once a person is treated and symptoms are clear and all these blood tests go back to normal, then we will stop medications, and we use more than one kind, and we show that they don't reacquire the illness by eating the chicken, by eating the beef. They only reacquire the illness by going back into the same water-damaged environment.
Okay. Now, let's go back for a second. I'd like if you can summarize and the major mental health effects that you have seen with these biotoxins.
In our group of patients, at one time I was recording the number of physicians patients had seen before they came all the way down to Little Pocomoke here on the eastern shore of Maryland. It was over 15. And in that group, it was impossible to find someone who had not been diagnosed with depression and given tricyclics or SSRIs of no benefit. It was impossible to find someone who wasn't diagnosed as being a hypochondriac or having anxiety, treated with medications of no benefit. And we never saw anyone that went to an academic center that hadn't been given Neurontin for unusual pain syndromes. The problems patients have is that the brain, when it's inflamed, is a little different than the knee when the knee is inflamed, but the concepts are the same. The tissues just don't work right. And if the neurons are inflamed, it turns out there are regulatory elements that help repair and correct that damage to neurons. And what happens in mold illness is the regulatory system is also impaired. So there's two separate hits from mold exposure as well as other biotoxins, not just inflammation, but also lack of control of reparative processes.
Have you ever suspected chronic biotoxin exposure to be related to neurodegenerative diseases like dementia?
I had a fellow in today who was diagnosed by some of the finest physicians in Washington, D.C. with Parkinson's disease. And he was a little atypical, and they hedged just a little bit, and they said it was Parkinsonism. And they were worried that he was developing the dementia that sometimes Parkinson's patients got. Actually, what happened was that his home was highly contaminated from water leaking out of his bathroom into the subfloor, and his crawl space was wall-to-wall mold. That's where the air handler was. When his mold illness was treated, his Parkinson's disappeared, his brain came back, his vision improved, his symptoms were reduced, and our diagnosis of Parkinson's just disappeared.
Wow, that's incredible.
I have a whole series of those stories.
That's very encouraging, I think, for people who have illnesses, mental illnesses, we'll call them, that don't really respond to traditional treatment.
One of the things that's always bothered me in looking at history taking, to ask about 30 symptoms like I do in a history will take about 5 minutes. And we're trained to take a good cardiac history that also takes 5 minutes. And when I look to see what physicians have recorded about their patients' illnesses, as soon as there's three or four symptoms in the first 15 seconds, it's almost like the doctor turns off his ears.
You get overwhelmed.
And here is a prescription for Prozac, getting ready to be written in 5 minutes.
I think that's pretty accurate, especially in this era of managed care. This is the Whole Psychiatry Hour on WMET 1160. We're talking with Dr. Richie Shoemaker, a pioneering family physician who has broken new ground in the diagnosis and treatment of biotoxin illness, which commonly affects mental function. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the effect that this can have on mental health, on brain function, on body fat. This is the Whole Psychiatry Hour on WMET 1160.
WMET, Washington.
How much would you pay for valuable news and information that could help you get ahead in business, invest smarter, increase your income, and lower your taxes? How about 38 cents a day? That's all it costs to get the Wall Street Journal. Imagine 8 weeks free delivery for 50% off the regular subscription rate. Millions of readers rely on the Wall Street Journal for the important business news and in-depth feature reporting they need on investments, taxes, new technologies, marketing strategies, and more. The Wall Street Journal puts it all within your reach. Subscribe now and get 8 weeks of the Wall Street Journal for only 38 cents a day. That's 50% off the regular rate. This limited time offer is available to new subscribers in the continental U.S. only.
Call now, 800-431-7700. That's 800-431-7700 for the Wall Street Journal, Adventures in Capitalism.
It's not too late. All over the country, people are still taking advantage of 3.99% mortgage rates from Quicken Loans. You could cut hundreds off your monthly house payment with a rate of just 3.99% on the Smart Choice interest-only loan. Call Quicken Loans at 800-316-5711 to see how much you can save. For example, with a $200,000 loan, your monthly payment would be just $665. Whether you're purchasing or refinancing, find out about this limited-time offer. The 3.99% Smart Choice Loan, exclusively from Quicken Loans. Call now, 800-316-5711. That's 800-316-5711. 30-year mortgage interest only for the first 10 years. Initial interest rate of 3.99%, APR 6.821%. Adjust every 6 months. After 6 months, interest payment is $1,125. Points required. Quicken Loans is an equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. Call now, 800-316-5711.
Hi, this is Joe Perry
and Steven Tyler of Aerosmith for Red. You know, it's okay to rock and roll and party down. Just don't get in that 2,000-pound bullet when you're done and cocked. And please don't drink and drive.
Someone that jaded you.
A reminder that friends don't let friends drive drunk. A public service message brought to you by the Ad Council, U.S. Department of Transportation, National Association of Broadcasters, and RAD.
The only place in Washington to hear the voices of Fox Radio. Talk Radio, WMET 1160, your station for Tony Snow. Weekday mornings, 9 to noon. Alan Combs, late nights from 10 to 1. Grease Man in the morning. J.D. Ballard at noon. G. Gordon Liddy at 2. Linda Chavez at 4. And Bauer and Rose at 6. Intelligent talk with a splash of grease. Talk Radio, WMET 1160. Online at WMET1160.com.
We're back with the Whole Psychiatry Hour on WMET 1160. Here once again is your host, Dr. Bob Hedaya.
This is the Whole Psychiatry Hour on WMET 1160. Thanks for being with us. We're talking with Dr. Richie Shoemaker, a family physician who has put chronic neurotoxic illness, illnesses caused by biotoxins such as mold and other biotoxins, on the map. Richie, if you have mold, let's say mold toxins, or even other biological toxins in your body, does that mean you're storing these toxins in your brain or in your abdominal fat? Where do these things hang out?
These little molecules, and we talked about their size early on, have the capability of moving from cell to cell, and they have the capability of docking on to what we call a receptor site at one cell or another. These particular toxins are both fat-soluble and water-soluble because of their structure, so that they will be in your abdominal fat for one day, and then they're going to travel perhaps into the liver.
What makes them travel?
What makes them travel is the basic molecule itself. It has a fat-soluble layer on the outside and a water-soluble layer on the inside. So as such, it is one where there's always a force directed on it. The water-loving aspect wants to go to water, and the fat aspect wants to go to fat. So it's innate in the chemical structure.
Are there things that people do that make these things mobilize from their fat?
Actually, no. The exercise doesn't do it. Saunas don't do it. Purging doesn't do it. Enemas don't do it. The real issue is that these compounds almost have a life of themselves. And because they're attached to receptors, there is going to be a time that they activate mechanisms. Now, we call them toll receptors, and they send out these inflammatory chemicals that we call cytokines, and then cytokines do additional things so that it is the cascade that we actually see. And while the action of one toxin molecule on one fat cell or one brain cell is small, added together, the long-term effects are systemic.
Mm-hmm. So how do these things affect receptors, and how many different receptors do these chemicals interact with?
We know that the hypervigilant compounds of the innate immune response, those are the elements that are formed in our blood, waiting to protect us immediately upon attack from a foreign invader.
Like the white blood cells?
Well, white blood cells are probably less important than elements like complement, mm-hmm, and some of these cytokines that we talked about. These compounds are ones that are involved in what we call antigen recognition. Even before there can be processing of antigens by white blood cells and delivery of the message to the antibody system, the acquired immune response, it is the complement and cytokines that act very, very rapidly to cause spasm of smooth muscle, to change fluid flow across blood vessel membranes, to attract other inflammatory elements, the word for that is chemotaxis, or bringing in the additional recruits. The combination of cells and these elements, these proteins, all lead to one common effect, and that is reduction of blood flow in capillary beds.
Now, can you explain that?
Sure. If we think about our skin getting red when we rub it, well, the redness is coming from extra blood coming into little tiny blood vessels that don't always have a lot of blood surging through it. And as we say, exercise and move around, there'll be extra blood flow into the small blood vessels of the muscles, bringing extra nutrients and extra oxygen. In biotoxin illnesses, that ability to recruit the extra blood flow is dramatically reduced. It is that reduced blood flow that starves cells for oxygen without killing them. It is that ability then of the cell to try to repair itself that then adds to the problem.
Well, let me ask you a related question. You're saying that the blood flow is reduced. And I know that there are some studies that show that actually blood flow to the frontal cortex in the brain, where we do our thinking and our planning and our judgment and our carrying through and following through on our plans, that the blood flow to this part of the brain is actually reduced by some of these toxins, yet people feel kind of foggy-headed and are you saying that feeling, they even feel like they have a brain fog and they feel like they have inflammation in their brain, but you're saying that they actually have reduced blood flow in their brain?
Right. If we look at measures of blood flow in a retina, which is about the only way we can access blood flow in a capillary level in the brain, you can show that reduction of flow begins about 3 to 4 hours after exposure and is marked the amount of reduction of flow that we can see. Similarly, with correction of the illness, that blood flow returns back to normal.
How long does that take?
Well, it depends on how long the illness has undertaken, or it has been going on, and how much of a burden there is. If it's a short-term exposure, whether it's someone deliberately exposing themselves to a pond full of blue-green algae, the healing process can be 3 days. If it's someone with genetic susceptibility to worsening of recruitment of additional pathways that can be affected, the healing can take 3 to 6 months.
Mm-hmm. And are there people who don't recover?
There are an ongoing small number at the top of the pyramid, that I call it, that drives me in my search to find new answers. Early on, when all I had was just anecdotal use of a drug cholestyramine to bind and remove retained toxin, things were going very nicely, and then someone didn't get better. And what was wrong with that person, who turned out to be a Lyme patient, was inflammatory cytokines. And now we had to have something to deal with cytokines. So then we say, all right, we fixed toxin, we fixed cytokine. Now why aren't they better? And that led me to finding their unusual organisms that grow opportunistically. In our noses, for example, they need to be removed. Then there are people who had all those free treatments, and they still stayed sick. Well, what else is going on? And as we build on experience, basically the driving force is, who's not getting better? we learn more about the illness. Right now, we're looking at a drug called VIP, or vasoactive intestinal polypeptide, that has tremendous increased effect systemically from its source up in the brain as well. And that drug is getting ready to come onto the market, and I'm optimistic that a huge number of people that I see with brain fog, with confusion, with bipolar disorder, with some diagnoses of schizophrenia, will actually be shown to have a biotoxin source, an inflammatory basis, and then resolution through correction of this whole pathway that goes wrong.
We're talking with Dr. Richie Shoemaker, a family physician who has pioneered work in biotoxin-related illness on WMET, 1160 AM. Richie, in your writings, you've connected biotoxins with weight gain. What percentage of overweight individuals would you say are affected by this problem, in your estimation?
In my interest of weight, which goes back to the early 70s, I've been looking at insulin, I've been looking at leptin. Each one of these hormones are very much involved with development and maintenance of obesity, despite cutting back and exercising more. No less than one-third of the patients that I see that don't lose weight easily are going to be biotoxin patients. In fact, we use a rise in leptin and a rise in weight as a result as the marker of when does the illness start.
Mm-hmm. You know, it strikes me as I listen to the way you developed your approach and, you know, who's not getting better, then you search why aren't they getting better. This is very much like what happened to me in dealing with mental health problems that weren't responding. So, you know, of course, eventually I realized that the head was connected to the body by the neck and that, you know, there's interactions with hormones and mental function and immune function, mental function. So we really pursuing things in a very with curiosity, I would say, and I think that really leads you to discover new options and approaches. What could someone do to determine whether they have a biotoxin related illness?
In illness caused by biotoxins, there will be the potential for exposure. You don't get this from nothing. You've got to be exposed, and whether it's a tick bite or exposure to a moldy building, or eating some fish from a reef, there should be some identifiable initiating aspect of the illness. There'll be many symptoms. You won't just be tired and have a headache. There'll be multiple symptoms from multiple body systems. And curiously, Bob, the symptoms don't stay the same from day to day. They change. There will also be readily identifiable abnormalities in easily obtained and insurance-reimbursable blood tests. Your doctor can tell you, if he does visual contrast sensitivity, he can tell you within 5 minutes whether you're likely to have a problem or not. We have a website that lets people take that test. I think it's $8 or $9. It's not terribly expensive. It's chronicneurotoxins.com. But your physician can use the biotoxin pathway and do your blood work and have an answer for you without going to 15 doctors and taking 20 medicines that you don't need.
When someone does this visual contrast test on the website, what percentage of people might come out normal but still have a problem?
What we have is clear recognition that 8% of our patients who have illness will have a normal eye test.
This is Dr. Robert Hedaya on the Whole Psychiatry Hour. We're talking with Dr. Richie Shoemaker. When we get back, we're going to talk about exactly what you need to do to identify and treat these problems.
The following is an urgent message for all inventors. Who cashed in on your last great idea? Do you have another invention? Do you need a patent? Then you need InventTech.
Everyone laughed at my pot that cooked and drained pasta. If I had the patent, I'd be rich.
Snap your fingers. Turn on the light. That was my idea, but I never thought to get a patent.
Don't let this happen to you. You may have a great idea, but unless you protect it, anyone can take it and keep the profits. That's why you need to call InventTech now. We'll send you a free inventor's kit, and you'll receive our free video or DVD with your confidential submission. Call 1-800-326-5757.
Cleaning with citrus was my little secret. I never patented it. Boy, was that dumb.
Don't let someone else cash in on your great idea. Call Inventech now for a free inventor's kit. Call 1-800-326-5757. Call 1-800-326-5757.
Attention men and women suffering from hair loss. Now, with Avacor, a world leader in hair regrowth, you don't have to be bald, even if you have a family history of hair loss. Here's Dr. Mark Goodman, board-certified dermatologist.
The main reason for thinning hair and baldness is hereditary hair loss. Just because there is a family history of hair loss doesn't mean you have to suffer. Avacor is specially formulated to reverse hereditary hair loss and regrow new healthy hair. Our formula targets the hair follicle to effectively stop hair loss and stimulate new hair growth. Before you consider expensive transplant surgery, remember, Avacor is FDA approved to regrow new healthy hair for men and women.
We're giving away a free month of Avacor with all of today's orders. Call 800-449-8917. That's 800-449-8917. Satisfaction guaranteed or your money back. Call 800-449-8917. That's 800-449-8917.
I like some cookies,
pizza,
popcorn, chocolate donuts.
Left to their own devices, children wouldn't always eat right.
Potato chips,
marshmallows.
That's why they have you.
Cotton candy.
And you have WIC. WIC provides nutrition information, healthcare referrals, even food to women, infants, children. To learn more, call 1-866-WIC-INFO. Your child has you, and you have WIC. Brought to you by the National WIC Association and the Ad Council.
Tune in. Log on. Stay connected from anywhere in the world. Talk Radio WMET 1160. Your station for talk is online at WMET1160.com. Get caught up on the latest news. Check out the program schedule. Post your comments to the WMET blog. And whether you're sitting in the office or you're on the road on business, you can listen live to Greaseman, Tony Snow, J.D. Ballard, G. Gordon Liddy, Linda Chavez, and Bauer and Rose. It's all online at WMET1160.com.
Let's get back to the Whole Psychiatry Hour on WMET 1160. Here is your host, Dr. Bob Hedaya.
Welcome back, folks, to the Whole Psychiatry Hour at WMET Talk Radio 1160 AM. I'm your host, Bob Hedaya. I welcome your comments, your suggestions, and yes, even your complaints. You can reach me at wholepsych.com, W-H-O-L-E. P like Peter, SYCH.com. And remember, you can listen to the archive shows or this show again on WMET1160.com or on my website. Richie, we're talking about biotoxin-related illnesses, and before we get to how you treat it, I've myself initiated trying to identify patients with this, and I actually find a lot of patients with mold exposures in their current environment. And I've been trying to do some of the initial tests that you recommend in your book, Mold Warriors. And I have to say I've come up against a stone wall in the laboratory. I've tried to do the MMP9 and the complement 3C3A. And they're stonewalling me, and yet you're saying these things are readily available. I imagine I'm not the only physician who's running into a problem. What do you think might be going on here?
What's happened is that LabCorp was more than happy to start providing the services that I use on a national basis when Quest in Baltimore ran into some technical problems of how specimens were handled on their own. So that if you had problems with C3A and C4A, two incredibly important compounds that change within 4 hours of exposure, I suggest that you check with your LabCorp rep because they're processing those lickety-split for me now.
Okay, yeah, I was using Quest. So
yeah, MMP9 is also one that the LabCorp will do for you. The difficulty that I run into in some of these specimen analyses is that you've got to make sure the lab handles the specimens correctly. For example, MSH is one of these little proteins that is very quickly digested by enzymes in your own blood once the blood has been drawn. So if you're going to measure MSH properly, you've got to add a blocker of that enzyme before the blood sits on the counter for 15 minutes. And in large commercial labs, that's somewhat difficult. So usually a physician has got to make, advance arrangements and so that everybody in the lab knows what to do. MMP9 has got to be spun down immediately and not left to sit and clot on the lab counter like they normally would. Levels after 15 minutes just start going up real high, so that communication becomes the first step in looking at these sophisticated assays. And even then, Bobby, when we send out our lab definition letter and it says send specimens frozen, I can't tell you how many we get sent to us from around the country that come shipped at room temperature.
So the physician has to really be on top of this. This is not something you can do casually.
That's true. Once you start seeing, however, the response in patients that you now can profile and give a sense of hope to, that's the first step to helping them feel better.
Are you, Richie, are you doing anything to train physicians?
We have physicians calling here routinely. In the Mold Warriors sales, I think over 1,500 doctors have bought the book now, so I hope that they can read and do the thing. When a doctor calls, I'm only too happy to talk to them.
That's great. I hope someday you put on a 2 or 3 day seminar.
We have plans for that. I'm going to be doing a couple talks up in your neck of the woods on December 14th. And right now, I got to get past that before thinking about something else.
That's great. Now let's talk about the actual treatment. Now let's say you've diagnosed the problem, at least initially. What would a typical patient go through in a course of treatment with you?
If a person comes down and they satisfy the case definition, they have the potential for exposure. They've got multiple systems involved with multiple symptoms. They've got no confounders. Their eye test is positive.
When you say no confounders, what do you mean?
It means that they don't have diabetes that's not treated. They don't have rip-roaring alcohol withdrawal, that they don't have some sort of tumor that's causing their symptoms. It's part of what we call a differential diagnosis to make sure that nothing else is likely to be making a person sick.
Mm-hmm. So you cover all the bases first.
You have to, and the differential diagnosis involves at least 70 different elements, and I still think it involves most all of medicines. But, after you do it a few thousand times, it's kind of routine, just like you do in your work.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, the first treatment, if the person's not a Lyme patient now, if they are a Lyme patient, it's a little different. If they are not a Lyme patient, it's cholestyramine, old-fashioned, terribly absorbed compound that tastes bad and gives you reflux and constipation, and no one in the world would ever take this drug if it didn't help them make feel better.
Are there any other side effects that people deal with when it comes to this?
The constipation and the reflux and the bloating and the belching are the worst ones. The kind of mental idea of mixing up this powder into this kind of vile-looking yellow-orange dyed material is kind of revolting in its own right.
Mm-hmm. But it makes you forget about the illness.
But when you start feeling better, who cares what it tastes like? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. How long would it take the average patient to feel better if they take this?
If we're looking at someone who's been sick for, say, less than 6 months, they'll be looking at significant changes in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
For those patients who've been sick much longer, years and years and years, usually there's many more things going on besides just toxin, and we approach those different aspects one at a time. We start with cholestyramine, and then after they've been on that for a month, we then look around and we say, all right, are you better? And if you're not, what's left to get rid of? And then we go back into our lab database. We say, do you have one of these unusual biofilm-forming staphs in your nose?
What is that?
There are some germs that used to be benign, Bob, and whether it's our use of antibiotics or just the evolution of bacteria, some of the staph germs in the hospital we worried about because you couldn't kill them with methicillin, and you heard about MRSA. Well, some of the benign staph epidermidis skin organisms and nose mucous membrane organisms have changed. They've acquired some of the genetic factors from their big brothers, the Staph aureuses, and now they act differently. We've been able to show that these germs make a protective layer called a biofilm, and in that biofilm they attach to a mucous membrane or to a foreign body in the body itself, whether it's an artificial hip or an artificial heart joint, and you just can't eradicate these organisms. It's almost like they're a limpet on a rock. And what they do is they make compounds that they release from inside their little shell. They get into the bloodstream, that set off inflammation, and they add to inflammation.
So then you have to tackle this piece of the puzzle next.
Correct. One of the exciting studies we're doing now at the University of Maryland and Dr. Mark Shurtleff's lab is identifying the correlation of presence of these organisms with low MSH and resistance to treatment in chronic fatigue. And the more profuse and more robust the biofilm formation, the worse the outcome is. So we need to put some of these organisms that everybody's ignored and said they were benign right on the front burner. And the same thing may be true in the gut. We've worried about irritable bowel disease and Crohn's disease and inflammatory bowel disease. Who knows what really is going on with organisms sitting on the mucous membrane, not invading, but just making us sick from inflammatory response.
So this is a often ignored factor. This is the Whole Psychiatry Hour on WMET 1160. We're talking with Dr. Richie Shoemaker, author of Mold Warriors, about biotoxin-related illness. Richie, let me ask you to tell the audience a little bit about the political struggles you've had in getting the officials to recognize this.
Well, I don't feel that people should be servants of the government. I think that government should be servants of the people. And yet when we have institutions in political arenas that do not want to alarm the public, they'll tend to minimize the potential dangers, whether it's Gulf War illness that was initially diagnosed as post-traumatic stress disorder, and now fortunately the research committee of the VA recognizes the neurotoxin illness, or whether it's the mold exposure down in New Orleans, where we're seeing, guess what, Katrina cough and post-traumatic stress disorder.
Mm-hmm.
There is an intentional approach, I think, to minimizing any public health risk.
Why?
We saw this in Fisteria, where there only were a couple hundred people sick, and I could treat them, and yet the fear that panicked the population caused a $100 million hit in reduction of use of the Chesapeake Bay for fishing and boating and recreation. People just got overwhelmed with concerns and not with fact. I think the answer for the government is to give people facts and not to say, there, young boy, nothing's wrong with you at all. Well, actually, there's a lot wrong that could be fixed for incredible few dollars. I mentioned the Parkinson's patient. His medical bills so far are nearly $650,000, and what fixed him was $200 worth of cholestyramine.
Mm, that's incredible. Just amazing. It always amazes me to see how we just get stuck, we as a culture or as humans, we kind of get stuck in a rut of thinking, and we're just not open to learning more about what might be going on, even when it's right in front of our face. It's so striking. One last question, Richie. Do you ever use lipoic acid for this?
I have not had any experience with lipoic acid. Dr. John Wilson down in North Carolina uses a lot of it, and he feels that it has significant additions to make. And as we learn more about all the complexities, we'll see where lipoic acid and other entities actually fit in. But as you mentioned, if I can't show the science and I can't show before and after, if I can't show the proof in laboratory studies, I just can't claim that it works.
Thanks so much for being with us today, Richie. I hope to have you back. That's it for today's Whole Psychiatry Hour here on WMET 1160 AM. If you'd like to learn more about this, you can check out Dr. Richie Shoemaker's book, Mold Warriors. He has several other books. Remember, what we discussed during this hour is for educational purposes only. If you decide to take your health into your own hands, that's great. Just make sure you're working with a qualified professional. This is Dr. Hedaya on the Whole Psychiatry Hour.
Medical advice, opinions, and the references cited are for information only and are not intended to diagnose or prescribe. For your specific diagnosis and treatment, consult your personal doctor or healthcare provider.